Hello there, and thank you for downloading the Agendas podcast from today, which is the 25th of June. And our big focus on the programme was the big summer exodus and how to look after your home while you are away for the summer, both from a security point of view and also a maintenance point of view. We caught up with Major Ahmed Al-Mari from the Dubai Police Crime Prevention Department. Also, Colin Thomas from the maintenance company, We Will Fix It. And with temperatures starting to edge closer to 50 degrees here in the UAE, doctors say they've seen an uptick in residents suffering from heat stroke. We were joined by Dr. Ali Nawaz. He's from the NMC Royal Hospital Khalifa City. He had all sorts of hints and tips on how we can stay healthy. Now, it's only been 2 months since we saw those record-breaking rains and, of course, the floods. And now Dubai's announced a 30 billion dirham rainwater drainage system. Construction expert Chris Seymour joined us to talk through the plans. And fallout from India's medical exam scandal is dashing the hopes of aspiring doctors in Dubai. We heard from two students who are worried about their future. And on National Seafarers Day, we discovered how the Marine Agency for Wooden Dhows are looking after their sailors. That was with His Excellency Mahmoud Amin Khoury. And we are going to be putting the focus, it's not on Summernomics, which is what the Business Breakfast just did, but we are certainly slightly inspired by their coverage because we are going to be looking at summer and the impact that summer can have on your home. Obviously, we all go away for a long period of time over the summer. I'm still here and you're still here at the moment. But if the roads are this morning or, I mean, even yesterday or anything to go by, a lot of people have already left. It feels like summer's mass exodus is well underway, despite the fact that the children haven't finished school yet. I suppose if you've got teenagers, they've probably finished their sort of exams. So maybe that's why. But when you do go away for a decent stretch, and let's be honest, most of us try to do it over the summer, and lots of people get a full month off. You know, they don't get any holiday the rest of the year, but they do get this 1 month off. So how do you keep your home safe during that period? Now, over the next half hour, we're going to talk about it from a maintenance point of view, but also from a security point of view. And on that point, producer Jennifer Crichton has been doing a deep dive into the details and joins me now in the studio. Jen, from a security point of view, we all know that the UAE is pretty safe. So is home security something that we need to worry about?
I mean, you're right. It is pretty safe. I mean, it's very safe, but we do live in big cities here. And while they are safer than the vast majority, if we're honest, opportunistic crimes do happen from time to time. This week, police in Ras Al Khaimah advised people against something that I suspect a lot of us have been guilty of. I know I have been, basically talking about our travel plans on social media.
Yes, I think I've told everyone what I'm doing.
Yeah.
By the way, for any future burglars, my husband is going to be here. I'm leaving, but my husband's here and he mostly works from home.
Yeah, so you've been telling everyone on the radio.
Yeah, don't burgle us.
But yeah, they're sort of saying, you know, let's not invite trouble. Let's not tell everybody where we're going to be, when we're going to be there. But the UAE's also seen in the past year or so a rise in people opting for home security cameras, CCTV systems. It's something that we talked about earlier this year on the show. And at that point, we spoke to security expert Amir Mortazai from Cormantis UAE. And he said that actually those systems themselves can sometimes come with their own security risks.
First and foremost, UAE is a very safe place. That's for sure. But the fact is that these cameras are now cheaper and we're kind of being influenced a lot by what's happening in US, predominantly the market where there's a lot of monitoring systems and security services. Obviously, these cameras are much easier to use nowadays. Unfortunately, what happens is that because the manufacturing, the different brands have increased, there's very little information about the camera recordings and where they are hosted. Generally, these are hosted on a cloud service outside UAE. And at the same time, the manufacturer of the camera and the provider of the service itself for the recording, they're not really vetted in the sense of safety and following the standards and ensuring that customers' personal information and video recordings are kept safe.
So that's Amir Murtazai. He's from Coromantis, UAE. And I remember talking to him back a few months ago, and it was because I was feeling mildly obsessive and angry about those Ring doorbells, because yes. all my neighbours have got them and I feel that they're watching me as I walk around the compound, that I'm being observed at all
times.
Yeah,
have they not been sort of reporting the kids?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, my kids got reported for playing Ding Dong Ditch. And I said, no, my adorable children would never do that. They would never ring a doorbell and then run away. And then I was sent video evidence of them doing exactly that. And I felt both wronged and foolish, and also vaguely like their privacy had been invaded, which was kind of a sort of slightly odd, odd meta feeling. But yeah, I mean, it's even more worrying. I always said these Ring doorbells were a bad idea.
You were right.
And I was right. Now people can access the information away from, and they can see when you go out and know that when they can burgle you potentially.
Yeah, and it is worrying. I mean, we've heard these concerns about things like baby monitors and stuff. When your footage is being put onto the cloud and you're not quite sure where, it is a concern. And as it turns out, apparently, if we live in Dubai, we don't need these cameras anyway. Now, this is very cool. It turns out the police here actually offer their own home security service, and it's free.
What?
Yes. Earlier,
what
I caught
you mean?
They will take care of your house for you while you're away. I caught up earlier with Major Ahmed Almari from the Dubai Police Crime Prevention Department, and he explained a bit more.
Dubai Police offers residents of Dubai the home security service. Through the service, the homes of subscribers are regularly monitored by Dubai Police patrols during their travel outside the country. This service can be requested through the Dubai Police website or the Dubai Police application on smartphones, and it is currently provided free of charge to the public. It is also worth noting that home security service is being developed in cooperation with our partners to include surveillance camera systems and smart sensors powered by artificial intelligence to detect and identify intrusions, which will be launched to the public very soon. Dubai Police urges travelers to place their valuable belongings in safe places, and we wish travelers a happy holiday.
Yes, you heard that right. The police will make regular patrols around the homes of residents who are away to make sure that their homes and their belongings are safe, and they are formulating a scheme where they will be able to make use of AI and CCTV to keep an eye on those houses that are empty, and it's all for free.
I mean, that is... I mean, honestly, if you hadn't got the clip from the police, I'd be like, yeah, right.
You didn't believe me when I first told you about this.
I didn't. I was like, yeah. And then, I was like, all right, it's on the website. Suppose. So you just go online, you can fill it in.
Yeah, basically. Now, there are a few conditions. It is for villa residents only, for obvious reasons. They would probably have a hard time driving past my front door on the third floor.
So, plus, you've got security, haven't you?
Exactly. You've got people in your building. So apartment dwellers like me need not apply. But assuming you live in a house and that is in Dubai, there are a number of ways you can register. So for people who are about to leave and are just hearing about this, there are actually registration points at the airport. You can go and sort it out there while you're killing time before your flight. Beyond that, and this one works whether you're in the country or you've already left, you can download the Dubai Police Smart Home Security app and you can sign up there. You just need a few basic details about your house, your tenancy, and then you include your dates of travel and your emergency contact number when you're out of the country in case there are any issues. And then that's it. Regular police patrols are yours. Now, that said, there are also a few things that the police want us to do to take some responsibility ourselves. They're sort of conditions of service, but let's be honest, they're fairly common sense. They're saying, as we said, don't post your travel itinerary on social media.
Or on the radio.
Make sure all your windows and entrances are locked. If you're using a safe, make sure it's closed. Keep your wardrobes, cupboards, things like that closed. Basically, don't invite people into your house by displaying everything through your windows. Valuable jewellery and money should be kept in safe deposit boxes or in banks if you don't have a safe in your house. And car keys or anything like that should not be left in an easily accessible and highly visible place. You do all of those things, the police will take care of the rest for you.
So do you know, I was thinking about this. We have a safe in our house, but I mean, it's not exactly a fancy thing. And it is where we put all our valuables. And I sometimes worry that by putting all the stuff in the safe, you're a bit like going, here it is, we've boxed it for you. Just come in the house.
Pick it up and dig it with you.
You can have everything at the same time. So if anyone's listening who's got any advice on you know, what you should be doing with your valuables and the type of safe you should have and the, I don't know, just the measures that you undertake in order to keep your home safe, then we would love to hear from you. So get in touch on 4001 or you can WhatsApp us on 04871 5500. I'm sure everyone has their own sort of hints and tips. I wonder if people actually have alarm systems here. Certainly back at home in the UK, we always had a burglar alarm. And in fact, we used to set it when we went upstairs. So, you know, if you went downstairs in the night a bit bleary-eyed and got yourself a glass of water, you know, the alarm would go off because, you know, we were nervous about people coming in downstairs. I mean, that, I've been here 9 years now. I have not given that a second thought. We don't even lock our front door. Like, I mean, back door, front. We don't lock any doors. I mean, literally, that's how safe we feel here. Whereas back in the UK, you'd alarm the ground floor in order to protect yourself.
I have a burglar alarm in my house in Scotland, and I've got a special setting on it, so I can go and get water and walk around inside the house, but the outside is all alarmed when I go to sleep. And then when you're out for the day, you put it on a different setting.
I mean, it's worse in South Africa. I remember we went to somebody's house in South Africa, and the guy who owned the house, the dad, was in charge of a security company, and he said, don't go out after lights out, so to speak, because the lawn is mined. And that just totally dazzled us. Obviously, he ran a security company, so he was very focused
on
security.
But I mean, it is. Elsewhere in the world, you would be paying a lot more attention to security. And I think probably to a degree, maybe we're a little too lax here. We all get very, very relaxed. But I can't imagine there are many cities in the world where the police say, hey, let us know when you're on holiday. We'll send a car past your front door to make sure everything's okay.
Yeah. Like, so you use the smart app for it. Is that what it is?
Smart app. Or there's more information on the Dubai Police website as well.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed for finding that out, Jen. Fascinating facts indeed, and very useful if you're about to head off on a long break. Up next, we're going to talk about how you can take care of your home from a maintenance point of view so you don't come back and have mushrooms growing out of your sofa, for example.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there. Welcome back to The Agenda. We're talking about the big summer exodus because hundreds of families apparently return to their home after the summer holidays to a complete horror story, to spreading mould, broken AC systems, water leaks. And that is the message from maintenance teams with those school summer holidays fast approaching. If you look out on the roads now, and I experienced this on the school run yesterday, it really pains me to say when Tom Urquhart is correct on something. But on this one, it appears he is right. There are a lot less people on the roads at the moment, certainly on the school runs. It feels like half the city's left already. And certainly once the school holidays start, I think the rest of us will go as well. So how can you be sure that everything that you leave behind is going to be safe and sound? How do you prep for your departure from the perspective of your home? I'm not going to talk you through how to pack, but what is best practice? You know, how should should you turn off your water? Should you turn off the AC? Let's find out. I've got an expert in the studio. Colin Thomas is the co-owner of We Will Fix It. Colin, good to have you in. How are you?
Very well. It's good to be back.
It's lovely to have you in all the time. A real pleasure. Tell me about some of the horror stories that you have seen when people have returned from their summer vacay.
The worst that I ever saw was a very large property in Jumeirah Island. And we were called in when the customer came back and their driveway was completely flooded. And then they went in through their front door and the whole of downstairs was black.
Ooh.
Then they went up the staircase and all of that was black. And they went along the long corridor to the master bedroom. That was all black. They opened their master bedroom. That was all black. And then they went into their bathroom and the toilet spray hose had failed. And they think about 2.5 weeks before they got back.
And it had just been leaking water for 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
And why the black? What's the black?
Mold. But mold on the walls, on the ceilings, even the floors.
It was the worst I'd ever seen.
We walked out. There's a health and safety issue there. So it's immediately straight to the insurance company. It wasn't something that it was way outside of our scope. But it was straight to the insurance company, and that was over $500,000 to fix.
How quickly does mould grow?
Good question. It all depends on the combination of conditions. So for mould to grow, as you're probably aware, you need a combination of the right level of heat and also humidity. And those are the two main elements that that can cause it. But certainly the 2.5 weeks that we thought was enough to take out the entire property.
Okay, so literally, I feel so badly for that family that
it was horrendous.
I've got a sort of slight tension in my tummy as a consequence, because no one wants to come back to that.
No.
I mean, that's all your possessions ruined as well. And the thing with mold is that it's bad for your health, isn't it?
It can get really into your lungs. It's bad for your health. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why we as a company, as soon as we walked through the door and we saw the scale we were dealing with, everybody out immediately.
Out. Yeah. Okay. So in order to avoid things like that happening, what should you do? I suppose the two components there, water and air conditioning. Let's start with the air conditioning.
Okay, air conditioning.
Do you turn it off?
That is the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is because obviously I want to save money. I spend far too much on my DIY bill.
Yes.
Yes, I'm going away for 3 weeks. Let's turn it off.
Okay, so this is down to exactly when those 3 weeks are. You're probably aware that as we get towards September, humidity increases again.
Okay.
So therefore, if you were going away for 3 weeks and it was maybe July, maybe to the middle of August, then you have the option of leaving all of your doors open, internal doors, not external, internal only.
I was going to say all the cats from the neighbourhood would come in that situation.
You can put on your extractor fan, so any extractor fan. So what we're trying to do is to promote circulation.
Okay.
And you can get away in most instances without having your AC on. Would I recommend it? Absolutely not. But then some people would want to go down that route. What we recommend is for one upstairs AC to be set on 27, leave all of the doors, internal doors again, open so that you're promoting that circulation. And if you imagine that cold air sinks, and by sinking, assume that you're in a villa, it will create the necessary circulation that you need to keep that air moving, and the AC will act as a dehumidifier. So that should be enough in most properties. If you live in a mansion, then at that point, think about two opposite ends upstairs, and those can basically do the job for you. So to create that circulation, that's what we're looking for, circulation of air throughout the whole property. When
okay.
It comes to AC.
I'm looking, 27, because our system is so old, it's still in Fahrenheit. So 27 degrees in Fahrenheit is 80. Okay, no, that is what we do. So we,
great.
But we actually tend to do it in everywhere. We leave all of them on at 80. So we could save money and just leave one on.
You could, exactly.
Okay.
Now, there's caveats to that. If your AC hasn't been serviced recently, there is a good chance that at some point you're going to get a leak while you're away. So you know that ACs leak and there is a condensate line that comes from them. Well, if that blocks, then at that point, unless you have somebody coming in on a weekly basis to take a look for you, you could come back to a similar type, but admittedly not quite so dramatic as the Jumeirah Islands example.
What was that programme, The Upside Down? It would be like coming back to The Upside Down. It's from a children's TV series. What's the TV series called? I'm trying to remember what it's called. Don't worry, I'll look it up. If anyone who's seen it will know what I mean, it's The Upside Down. It's a bad place where mould grows on your walls, basically.
Right, yeah. We see lots of mould growth around and about, and it's normally due to lack of circulation. Your main issue.
Okay, have you ever seen mushrooms growing out of somebody's sofa?
Yes, not here in the UK. Yes, I have absolutely seen
that. So the reason why I ask that is because I was told that if you don't leave your AC on over the summer, you'll come back to mushrooms growing out of your sofa. And I wondered whether it was apocryphal. But it sounds like it's
feasible,
yes.
Without a doubt. I haven't actually seen it here. I've seen mould on sofas and quite frequently. No, I haven't
Not
seen...
Not actual shrooms.
No, I haven't seen full mushrooms here.
Okay, so how about turning your water off? Is that something that you ought to do?
Really good idea, if you can.
Oh, okay.
Simple reason is it's pressurised here. In fact, it's pressurised everywhere, but here it's pressurised to about 2.5 bar, which is significant. So if you got a leak, then you would have a significant amount of water being pumped into your property. So on that one, it's simple. There is an isolator switch right next to, on the nearest wall normally, to your water pump, which you just turn off before you're ready to go. At that point, find one tap, turn it on hot, turn it on cold. At that point, you've depressurised everything. And then there is no issue.
And then you turn it off again?
No, you leave it on. Leave that pump off while you're away.
Okay, And then how about security and safes? Now, you heard there that I put all of my I put all my valuable things in a safe, and then I worry a little bit that it's a bit like packaging it up for the burglar and say, look, I put it in one place for you. All you need to do now is just take that box, which I'd loosely bolted into my wardrobe floor.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I actually think if you've got somebody who has made the steps to break into your house and they're there to steal the safe, then
they've probably bought a crowbar.
There's going to be some additional bits and pieces, but we can make it just a little bit more entertaining for them. So the first thing that, and we do this job quite frequently, which is to use expansion bolts, which are those, you know, the big bolts that you see things like sail shades being attached to walls with.
Oh, yes.
Or AC units being attached to the side of a building. So we can use that. And thanks to the brilliant construction here in Dubai, where we have solid concrete slabs on every floor, what we can do is drill directly. So rather than it being inside your cupboard, we can put it directly into the slab itself with expansion bolts, which means unless they really, really want it, then they won't get it back off again.
And I haven't got that much good stuff. You know, just enough to put it all in one box. I have to say, thank you, Colin. Lots of people are sending texts in. Laura says, we love the We Fix It guy. I'm making notes as he speaks.
Ah,
so there you go.
That's very kind. It's also on our website. So we have this article there if people want to refer to it.
That's very cool indeed. And lots of people have texted in saying that the TV series I was referring to is Stranger Things. That's where there is the upside down. You should watch it, Colin. It's a great TV series. There's three episodes. It's got Demi Moore. Is it Demi Moore? No, it's not Demi Moore.
Loves Stranger Things.
It's the lady who was done for stealing.
I can't watch it.
It was the lady who was done for stealing years ago. Everyone can text that in now. Honestly, my brain is not working today. You can tell, no memory. Hang on a sec. Winona Ryder. Lucy says it's Winona Ryder. Thank you very much indeed, Colin Thomas, co-owner of We Will Fix It. We've all been making notes and we all now know how to manage our AC over the summer. So thank you very much for your time. Have a good summer.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So I don't know about you, but I really noticed the temperature over the weekend. Why did I notice it? Maybe I was out and about a bit more in the middle of the day. You know, when you're at work, you're sort of in the office in the middle of the day, at the heat of the day. But we were out and about at the weekend and my goodness me, it was hot. And I know it gets hot every summer. This is my ninth summer here in the UAE. But we always forget how bad it gets, don't we? I think that's why we can survive it. But the temperatures did edge very, very close to 50 degrees over the weekend. And as a consequence, doctors say that they have seen an uptick in residents who are suffering from heat stroke. And it's worth remembering, we've had a massive influx of people into this country over the last sort of year or 2 years. And I think, you know, we've had a lot of people from Russia and I'm from England. We're not used to hot temperatures in England. They're not used to hot temperatures in Russia. And I think we've seen a lot of people coming in and they don't really get how bad the heat can be for you. So the UAE, of course, has already introduced its midday break for workers. That runs from June the 15th all the way through until September the 15th. That aims to protect your blue-collar employees against any injuries that might result from working in high temperatures over the summer. But it's important for all of us to keep an eye out for the impact of the heat on our health. And joining us now to talk through the precautions that you can take is Dr. Ali Nawaz. He's a consultant in emergency medicine at NMC Royal Hospital Khalifa City, which of course is in Abu Dhabi. Dr. Nawaz, thank you so much for your time. It's great to have you join us. Tell me, are you seeing a rise in patients coming into your emergency room as a consequence of these soaring temperatures?
Good morning, Georgie, and thank you so much for having me. And yes, we have seen a little rise in the number of patients that are coming to us with the heat-related illnesses. The spectrum of the presentations are anywhere from a mild heat kind of feeling to a heat stroke, which is actually really serious, and that can be life-threatening. The number has gone up a little bit, and it's totally preventable, and I don't see why the number can not go down, basically.
Yes. I mean, it's all about education, isn't it? I mean, what type of problems does the heat cause? I mean, I can think of a few, but they're sort of anecdotal. You know, biologically, what problems do they cause?
So our human body is set at a certain temperature range, and if you go outside the range, the human body starts suffering. So with temperature, a lot of heat coming into your body. The body set at around 37. If it goes higher quickly, and then the heat doesn't come out of the body quick enough, then the regulator in the body will stop functioning, and that is whole body function will be disturbed, and that is kind of heat stroke. So the symptoms that you get from heat is simple fatigue, body aches, to heat exhaustion, which is the next level, where you feel dizzy, you have vomiting, you feel weak, your pulse rate goes higher, and then you have muscle cramps. So we were talking about blue collar workers. So we have seen an influx on those presenting to our emergency rooms. And they have severe heat cramps. And luckily, the body's made in a way that if you are faced extreme heat, the body tells you to go away or run away or do something about it. So at that stage, most of the patients of heat exhaustion will run away, avoiding themselves from heat stroke. But it depends on patient to patient. Some patients might just go unconscious and then they are not able to run away or do something that they need to do, or go to a cooler place or a shady area. And they then end up having a heat stroke. So the heat stroke symptoms are really severe. So next category, where you have total confusion to a seizure, to a coma, or to even death. But fortunately, the mortality or the death rate is not very high in our region right now.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we have seen and heard of the cases that are being reported in Saudi Arabia at the moment, yeah, because of Hajj. We've heard a lot about cases being reported in India. We're very lucky here in the UAE. We have this, you know, tip-top medical system that jumps into action if you've, yeah, got any issues. I want to talk to you about the treatment for heat stroke, but let's start first of all with the early symptoms that people should be looking out for, both in adults and, of course, children.
Right. So children and elderly, their body temperature control is not as sort of robust as a normal fit and well human adult. Symptoms like, we've all felt the symptoms of heat.
Grumpiness is how it starts with me. Right. I get very grumpy.
Yeah, you want to run away from where you are. You want to find an air conditioning room, or you want to go there. That's not natural body's response. So this is how you start feeling it. And if you suppose carry on doing the strenuous exercise in a heat, cold, in hot weather, and then that's actually generating double the amount of heat into your body, and then you're not getting rid of it because of the mist outside, because of the dampness outside.
Oh yeah, the humidity, of course. Right. Is that even more of a concern?
That is more of a concern, because how the body gets rid of your temperature is by sweating. And if it's really humid outside, then the sweating doesn't function as it should be functioning.
Oh, what's the phrase? There's a wet bulb monitor or something. I'm trying to remember the bulb. I'll come up with it. Don't worry, I'll look it up. Yeah. But yes, so if the humidity is at a certain level, then the human body can't sweat and evaporate the sweat and therefore unable to cool down.
That's right.
And obviously, so children and the vulnerable, we need to keep a particular eye out for. Yeah. How do you treat heat stroke and heat exhaustion? Both, you know, outside the hospital.
So outside the hospital, if you see somebody is having symptoms of heat exhaustion, or you feel that they are really overheated, then you need to take them to an area where it is shade and there's no direct sunlight on them, and then loosen all their clothes. If they are conscious, give them water, rehydrate them, mist, like, and then fan. You can cool them down by spraying water on them. So that's the first thing. And call a 999 and send them to hospital. Within the hospital, how we receive those patients, it depends. Severe heat stroke, we go by what we normally treat. But generally, the principles are for heat stroke are that we give them cooled fluid into their bodies. We do the same ice, and we can immerse them into cooled water.
Literally immerse the body in cold water cool them down as quickly as possible.
That's right. That's one of the methods of cooling them down. Because we are rushing against time, and if we lose more time, then they can end up in a heat stroke, which has its own problems later on. So we need to cool the body down as quickly as we can, then we give them ice packs, we give them ice jackets, and then further intervention, depending on if it's really a severe case, then we do sometimes body cavity lavage by doing intervention, but that's the last resort.
What's body cavity?
So it's kind of you put
inside your body
to cool it down by
wow.
that's the final
The final line of defense.
And then in addition to other management that we do for anybody who is really critically sick.
Wow, goodness me. I don't think I realised how serious it could be. That's really interesting. I mean, let's bring it back to the more to the sort of more likely situation, which is, you know, how can you stop yourself getting into a situation anywhere near that? You know, what's the practical sort of advice? Many of the things I'm sure all of us listening will know already, but I think it's worth reiterating.
That's right. So basically the heat time is now. So starts at 12:30, finishes at 3:30, but still keeps really, really hot after that. So maybe organize your activities accordingly. Have enough protection, sunshades, umbrellas. Rehydrate yourself, not with sugary water or alcoholic drinks, just with the salty water. Protect with sunblocks. That's probably the best. And once you feel the symptoms, you need to find a space there where you're safer. And obviously, take care of the children or pets in your cars, and don't let them sit in the car with even if the AC is working. Maybe sometimes really, really hot inside, and then they can't get out.
Oh gosh, that scares me. Even the thought of that scares me. Yeah. My car gets up to a ridiculous degree, and of course, wearing hats, loose clothing, all the stay in the shade, try and keep yourself cool. Those sensible pieces of advice, Dr. Ali Nawaz. Thank you so much for joining us in our studio. We really appreciate it. Fantastic advice for all of us. And I had no idea. I'm very interested to hear about how bad heat stroke can be and how you actually end up treating it within the hospital. So thank you so much for your time. Dr. Ali Nawaz is a consultant in emergency medicine at NMC Royal Hospital, Khalifa City in Abu Dhabi.
Thank you very much
indeed for your time.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there. Welcome back to The Agenda. Right. I think it's a sign of how things have changed in the UAE that I can get very excited about a announcement about drains. And I think everyone got quite excited about it yesterday when it was announced, because Dubai is set to begin work on a rainwater drainage system. It's going to be worth 30 billion dirhams. It's called the Tasreef project, which probably means something in Arabic. I probably ought to look it up and find out. But if you know what Tasreef means, essentially it's going to enhance Dubai's rainwater drainage capacity by 700%. I'm going to get into the technicals here. It's got capacity of over 20 million metric tons of water daily. What's M with a little three? I think it's metric tons. With a flow capacity of 230 little three per second. The idea is that the system's going to obviously meet the demands of Dubai, but not just for the next few decades, it's for the next century. Now, the announcement comes obviously off the back of that extraordinary storm that we saw 2 months ago. We saw more than 140 millimetres of rainfall over 24 hours. That was in Dubai. Put that into context, an average year sees just under 100 millimetres a year. And climate experts say, unfortunately, we are set to see more examples of intense rainfall as global warming changes the planet's weather systems. So let's find out a bit more about this sexy drain system. Joining us now is construction and development expert Chris Seymour. He is the managing director of MACE Middle East. Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the line. I hope you're well. Is this a new announcement, or is the government just fleshing out the details of the drainage and sewerage system that was already planned?
Okay, so a really good question, Georgia. So a major stormwater drainage system project was announced in 2019. In fact, much of it was completed during that period, and it involved a significant sized stormwater drainage and pumping station, but that was mainly to the southern part of Dubai. And so really what they've done now is, in the face of that major storm that we all experienced, is really to bring those plans forward that were going to really be planned over many years. Now it's in the next 10 years to take account of the climate changes that we're now seeing. So this is a really good example of climate adaptation. We saw it in COP28. There's a lot of news around how the cities around the world were all going to have to spend considerable amount on their infrastructure to deal with climate change. We call that climate adaptation. And this is one example of that. And it just shows how expensive it is. 8 $1 billion, 30 billion dirhams.
So back during COP28, when everyone was talking about climate adaptation, I was a bit like, that is such a cop-out. Surely we should just be talking about how to prevent global warming. But I think for many of us, I don't think we quite realise how quickly the effects of a warming planet were going to lead to such dramatic weather changes. Now, a huge thanks to Danielle, who's just told me that M with a little three means cubic meters. So thank you very much to Danielle there. But clearly, an extraordinary capacity. They're obviously anticipating even more intense rainfall here.
Yes, 20 million cubic meters of water per day, which is a lot of water, and it goes down some very large pipes. And I think the strategy has been is really to look at the data to see whether the storm that we all experienced could happen again in the foreseeable future. And it seems because of the climate change, let's not forget it is over 1 degree already and heading towards that Paris limit of 1.5 degrees. We are seeing those changes taking place. And so many of the cities in the world are starting to having to make the type of investment that we're seeing here. And I think it's important that we see this project being done, and it's good news that Dubai has reacted really quickly to the climate change element, if you like, that happened during that storm, but also the scale of the investment. $8 billion is a lot of money. And normally we talk about, you know, $1 billion would normally be what we would class as a mega project. So this definitely is a mega project, which will hopefully enhance the whole of the drainage system in Dubai. And I think it's also important to say that I think during that that flooding event, many residents were under the impression that maybe Dubai does not have drains, but Dubai does have an efficient drainage system for the type of weather that we would normally experience. But of course, what we're now seeing is that these climate events are coming quicker. And the problem, of course, with storms is that it involves a large amount of water in a relatively short space of time. So it's a huge pulse of water that needs to be discharged. And so the tunnels and the drainage systems have to be very large in order to cater for that pulse, which then may not happen again for many years.
OK, so what does an $8 billion storm drainage system look like? I mean, it must be quite depressing for the people building it in many ways, because most people won't even know it's there.
That's the and in fact, that is the aim, because it is in order to keep the city as it is, looking in the way it is that the plan has planned. And Dubai has always got a good reputation for its skyline and indeed how it's laid out. And the aim is to make sure that all of this happens pretty much under the ground, unseen. And indeed, even when there is an extreme rain event, the water will be discharged again unseen. And so residents will just enjoy the fact they can, in fact, get to work and all of those things that they were otherwise prevented to do. And so what it entails is quite a complex network of drains and including quite large tunnels. Actually, they indicate they're going to be using tunnel boring machines for much of it, getting successively larger until they get to a series of pumping stations, which then, of course, filter the water, treat it to a certain extent, and then discharge it out to the sea. We remember that, of course, during that rain period, that the water table in Dubai is very close to the surface, so the water surcharges very fast. And so it's important that the drainage system is very responsive to enable that to be discharged safely as well, and very quickly as soon as the rain starts falling.
Do you think there's any suggestion that they might try to save the water? Because, of course, most of the year we have a drought situation. You know, we have a water shortage and we have to create water out of seawater using a process of osmosis. So do you think that part of the project might be for Dubai to have storage capacity?
This wouldn't contribute to storage capacity. There is Dubai generally uses natural storage. UAE uses natural storage, which is in aquifers, which are a long way below the ground. Now, those aquifers actually need to be recharged because they are actually starting to reduce in level. So whilst the water table is very high, the level of water in the aquifers is actually diminishing. And so there is a project to recharge the aquifers. The thing is that they're not everywhere. And so you couldn't just rely on stormwater to channel it into the indeed into the aquifers. And it's not the type of water that you'd want in there either, because it's, you know, it's of course run through the streets and so forth. So it does need some pretreatment. And so there's, at the moment, there's no plans to divert it into aquifers. That would normally be undertaken with desalinated water. So this is very much about discharge. And going back to the problem of that really big pulse of rain, when you do get a flooding event, it's quite difficult to plan for. And of course, they need to use a lot of modelling devices in order to understand when that might happen and the volume of water that, in fact, they might be dealing with.
Chris Seymour, Managing Director of Mace Middle East. As ever, thank you so much for your time. Really interesting to find out more about that amazing 30 billion dirham project to improve Dubai's rainwater drainage system. Really fascinating stuff, and certainly a story that we'll be following as they build it, if we can see them building it, because of course most of it will be underground.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there. Welcome back to The Agenda. We're going to turn now to a really interesting international news story coming out of India that's having really far-reaching implications on aspiring doctors right here in the UAE, because India's national medical admissions exam has been rocked by allegations of cheating and unfair marking. And that is after thousands of candidates gained really very suspiciously high marks. Now, officials there are denying the allegations that the exam papers were leaked beforehand, but they have so far admitted that there were some irregularities that had come to light. Now, the exam is essentially a gateway to studying medicine in India. You have to have a decent score to get admission to medical college. You have literally millions of people taking the exam every year, and only a really small percentage do well enough to get that place at university. And it's not just students in India that it's impacting, because aspiring Dubai-based medical students often travel to India to take the exam. And as a consequence, they now fear they could miss out on getting into college effectively. Now, one of them is Farzan Mohammed. He is a 17-year-old student based here. This is his story.
I was one of the 24 lakh students at Road Neat this year, with the hopes that my scores would lead me to a seat in a reputable medical college. However, due to recent controversies that took place this year regarding the paper leaks and the grace marks affected not just me, but so many other NEET aspirants. What's painful about this exam is that an examinee's success is at the cost of another examinee's failure due to the competitive nature. So when it was revealed that the students were paying large sums of money just to get the question paper, it was quite a shock to everyone, as it discredits the entire exam. And the awarding of grace marks due to lack of time pushed back the ranks of the students unfairly. Now, the prospect of getting into a government medical college for me seems bleak. The scandal has only added to the challenges we face. I hope this year is the last of any such discrepancies, so that the years to come, my peers won't face any such troubles.
Okay, that is Farzan Mohammed. And I have to say, my heart really goes out to these students, because they work so hard throughout their teens. And then to find out that there might be some cheating going on in the exam must be incredibly disheartening. And we're actually joined on the line now by another Dubai-based medical student, Rutba Kazi, who is aspiring to work as a doctor. She's based here in Dubai. She's only 17 years old. Rutba, thank you so much for joining me on the line. I mean, hello there. So you took the exam, and have you had your results yet?
Yes, the exam was conducted on May 5th, and the results came out actually 10 days earlier than when they were expected on June 4th.
And did you do well in the exam?
I think I did well. So basically, in this particular exam, in order to secure a government seat, a score of above 600 is a certain that you'll get a government seat with that amount of score. And I scored 637. So I was pretty happy with that score, because I could get admission in a government college of my choice in my state. But now, with the whole controversy going on, they're saying even 650 plus, it's going to be difficult to secure a seat. And now the chances are very uncertain.
Oh my God, that's really heartbreaking for you, because I was, you know, fist bumping your 637, because that is absolutely amazing. Congratulations. You clearly worked incredibly hard. But because of this sort of scandal, does that mean it's possible that you might not be able to become a doctor at all in India?
Yes. The chances of admission to a government seat are pretty bleak. Perhaps a private college, which the fees is exorbitantly high, but the chances of getting into a government college are pretty low unless I apply through state quota.
Do you think there's any chance that they might rerun the exam? Because there's been so, I mean, literally you've got parents and students out in the streets protesting in India.
There are so many demands for re-neet, and it is fair in a way to ask for it. But the fact is, there's this particular mindset that you have when you're preparing for this. So I prepared for 2 years, and this particular level of preparedness is there before the exam. And now that the exam is done, you know, you sort of get relaxed a bit. And now if there's another exam, it really changes the whole, like, you know, you're not mentally prepared for it in a way. And what about the students who, you know, worked hard, you know, were able to score what they did, you know, honestly, and now they're going to have to give the re-exam? What if the re-exam is tougher? What if they end up scoring lesser what they did earlier? So this is sort of unfair to the students who were meritorious in this examination.
Is this the first time that you've become aware of other pupils potentially sort of cheating or using leaked papers in this type of exam? Is this the first time it's happened?
No, in fact, every year there is a bit of controversy regarding paper leaks. In fact, I think 2015 or 16, a re-exam was conducted because of paper leak. But this year, the whole controversy is just so much bigger because it's not just the leak of papers, but also the grace mark scam going on. So,
how does it make you feel, you know, when you've put in all this effort? And like you said, I imagine there's a certain amount of sort of cramming and really intense work ahead of an exam. How does it make you feel that the integrity of the exam process is not what you would hope for?
It's really like a breach of trust, I'd say. It's affecting not just me, all of the NEET students who did work hard for this, both mentally as well as in a practical sense, right? Because this was my first attempt. There's people who give 5-6 attempts by taking drop years. And those people who qualified, now they're in this, they spend years focusing just on this. And now they must be so uncertain. You know, their life must be so chaotic, wondering, you know, what to do next. Even for students like me who did have backups, they don't know what to do, like, because the decision is still in process. They're still deciding what to do with this. So what do we do? We're in this like limbo where should we apply elsewhere? Should we give up on this? And even mentally, yeah, when you're preparing for, in my case, for 2 years, yeah, this is 2 years of complete dedication, perseverance, a lot of sacrifices. So finally, you think that, you know, this is our chance to take a break, finally, you know, get rid of all the stress. But we're still in this uncertain state where we're like, you know, what are we going to do? What's going to happen next? What to expect?
Gosh, I really feel for you. Ritva, thank you so much for coming on the radio and speaking so eloquently about the impact that this scandal is having on you and other students. Honestly, amazing to get you join us on the radio. Only 17 years old, Ritva Kazi, a Dubai-based aspiring medical student. We will definitely catch up with you. We'd love to follow your story and find out a little bit more about what choices you make going forward. And, you know, if maybe they decide to reset the exam, we'd be really interested to speak to you then. But thank you so much for joining us on the radio today. It's been a great pleasure to have you with us. Yes, that's Ritva Kazi, just one of many students, millions of students who are facing that uncertainty.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And we're turning our attention now to sailor safety and occupational health, because they're coming under the spotlight as the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation here in the UAE mark World Seafarers Day. I am willing to bet that you have never given the people at sea a second thought. I mean, I have, but that was only because I worked on the newspaper for a while. And we used to do quite a lot on seafarers and you know, the people who are on board those ships that are, for example, travelling through the Red Sea at the moment. But here in the UAE, obviously, it's a trading nation. We're always looking outwards towards the ocean. The Marine Agency for Wooden Dhows here are actually running a workshop where experts are going to help provide the necessary training for sailors on modern safety techniques. Now, this really intrigued me because I didn't really realise that wooden dhows were still being used extensively in our waters. So joining me now to tell us a bit more is His Excellency Mahmoud Amin Khoury. He is CEO of the Marine Agency for Wooden Dhows at the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation. Good morning to you, sir. Tell me, are these wooden dhows still used a lot in our waters?
Yeah, good morning to everyone. Yeah, the wooden dhows are still widely used in the entire UAE and especially in Dubai. That is the historical and significant cultures and history value, and they are continue to be a vital part of the marine operations. And as a UAE or Dubai especially, that we started culturally 70 years ago, and more than that also, with the creek of Dubai, and that was the wooden dhow was there. So with the neighbor countries which we are having it, yes, that is the numbers are increasing year by year. It's not decreasing about regarding to using the wooden dhow for the cargo movement in and out.
That is so interesting because they're such traditional boats. And I have to admit, when I see them in the creek, I kind of presumed that they were all there for tourists. I hadn't realised that they were still being used as cargo boats. How come there hasn't been a transition to more modern boats?
Well, the technique which they are using it, the wooden dhows within the seven neighbors countries which we are having, their port is around 130 ports. It's been built for this kind of the boat, and they are quite happy with that one. Some of them now they are sailing for 5 days. Still, they are very happy with the cost-wise, and that is the boat is a movement easy way, and the technique which they have modified it within the boat, within it's showing more easily for them to move from the traditional port to the other traditional port, which for them is that the cost saving, and also it's secure and safe also for them. And it's a historical, which many people thought that it might be decreased and it might be to go into the modern. The modern is increasing, but the traditional wooden dhow is increasing too within the neighbor countries.
So tell me, what type of challenges do the men who work on these boats face? You know, the sailors.
The same challenges will be for the steel boats. It's the weather conditions and the boat. But the point is over here that this kind of the boats, they are already getting the same safety-wise on the seasides in case of any problems, sickness, weather conditions. It's not just a Dubai, within the entire UAE border. And we always that hearing from them that the radio communication is not, and we are trying to maintain for them and bring the company to be in touch. And mostly it will be a seasick and a rough sea. That's all.
And so you're hosting a workshop today to help these men, to encourage them to improve their health and safety and also their wellness. What was the focus specifically?
The focus is the sailors are keep changing within the wooden dhow. And the focus was this time they were doing modified it within the PCFC to have in them four languages to get them in know very well what is it. And always the techniques will be changed, and always the safety is getting changed and easier for them. And we have given them how to be contacted within the UAE border, not only Dubai, whenever they're in risk, and the safety which we give them in terms of the sea, if they fail any sicknesses within the short way around, they can come back and contact the tower immediately. And in case of that, they require more salt water and salt medicines during the hot weather in Dubai. And we are informing them how to keep this engine switched off in terms of the weather forecast that is with it. And we are telling their staffs, and this one, that's a Dubai rule, that you cannot be from 12 to 3 o'clock under the sun to be worked and also to give them some equipment, how to use it, and we're asking them if they need anything. And keep modifying in our training and that safety-wise for their sickness, because their safety is our aim. And as a marine agency, that we have to be fully responsible to take care of them during their stay and go, and even the boundary of the UAE seaside.
Sir, it's always a great pleasure to have you join us on the radio. Thank you very much indeed for talking us through those workshops that you are introducing, or that you've been running in order to mark World Seafarers Day. You've just been listening to the voice there of His Excellency Mahmoud Amin Khoury. He is the CEO of the Marine Agency for Wooden Dhows at the Ports, Customs and Free Zone Corporation. Thank you very much indeed for your time, sir. The Agenda is live Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.